How's it going at the office?
Office is going great. Super busy. Lots of patients, lots of people coming in, you know. Like to see lots of new people from infants to adults. Kind of help people along their journey, and everyone is definitely in a different place than anyone else. Everyone has their own unique circumstance.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. Chelsea and I were talking about our myofunctional therapist. We're talking about a patient today where he is so healthy. I mean, it just he looks amazing, like very few symptoms. Has his wisdom teeth even in, 40 millimeter palate, horrendous tongue tie, like very, very obvious tongue tie. But right, why would you release it until, you know, and he didn't even really know until we started getting down this road of how do you sleep? How do you really sleep? And we're doing some even further expansion. And he's been sleeping with and also an oral mandibular
advancement
appliance. And he says, you know, wife says I don't snore as much and I definitely feel a difference. So sometimes you just don't know.
No, you can. We used to think that it was only the people with the big necks were the only ones that truly had any sleep apnea issues.
Yeah.
Now we're finding that's absolutely not true.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I'm watching the Olympics and I can.
Oh, yes, me too.
Isn't it interesting?
Yes, it is interesting.
It's like, okay, these are the fittest people on the planet. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, okay, mouth breather. Okay, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is like I was watching, what was it? The 400 meter hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going, and the 1500 meter race, and 90% of them mouths were completely
closed.
Isn't
that amazing? I noticed the same thing. Like they have been running and going forever and ever, and
their mouth are closed,
right? And not saying that, you know, a lot of people, if you exercise, you're gonna huff and puff a bit, but to have the lips sealed and they're just, well, it's incredible.
Yeah, and you're okay. That's efficient.
Yes.
Lung use.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow.
Efficient breathing.
And then they get done with the race, and they're not even breathing hard.
No, and it's incredible.
I'm actually in awe. Their VO2 max must be just out of this world.
Yeah.
And their lung capacity and everything. And I'm jealous because I get on a rower and I can't keep my mouth closed.
Or hiking up a hill.
Or yeah. Yes, any of that. Yes, exactly. So it's really, but then I watch some of them. Yeah, like it just.
It's amazing. And I wonder, because you've heard of athletes doing training with mouth tape and nasal breathing. Like, I don't know how widely that's caught on, but I do wonder if.
But when you see the majority of them.
Athletes.
Their mouths are closed until maybe the very end.
I wonder if they train that way, though. I wonder if that's part of their training, is they if they know about nasal breathing. I mean, I would think so.
The elite athletes, I think, these are the very, I mean, look.
Yeah.
Their mouths are, they're closed. They might be open. I mean, just at the very end, they're just taking a final breath, one big breath. But man, it just blows my mind. Go to the 1500 meter race. Did you see that yesterday?
I watched a few of them. I don't know which one. Was that the one that was a surprise?
Total surprise.
Yes, the USA one.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
That was incredible.
Was incredible.
I mean, at the very end, the guy pulls it out. The US pulls it out. And okay, and the other thing that I loved about this race is the guy from that was in the lead the whole way. He's so cocky.
That's what I heard. I heard he talks a lot.
Oh, he's a huge talker.
Well, no, the guy in third from Great Britain.
So
I heard those two had been having mouthing off to one another.
Like, okay, I'm the greatest, back and forth, and neither one of them won. That's the thing that was so cool.
Oh yeah, I love the Olympics so much.
I do too. I think it's.
Yep, look at that, mouth closed. I mean, just their efficiency is, and they have to be, everything has to be perfect.
Yeah. And then this is where he just goes around both of them.
Just turns it up a gear, goes.
And this is where your patriotism is like, go USA!
Oh, I was freaking out at home. I was so excited.
And he almost caught the other guy. I couldn't
believe it. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a great race.
Anyways, okay. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is just kind of the history of tongue tie releases. Nate and I kind of was looking a little bit, and we both have heard in different lectures about, and I actually looked this up, in the 1600s, the midwives used to grow out their pinky fingernail.
Yeah.
And what was the purpose of that?
They would routinely use their fingernail to clip a tongue tie.
Yeah. So they just check every baby.
Yeah.
And if it was there, it just, whoop, they just would release it. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know was that the surgeons in the 1600s got mad and they had a power struggle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Guess what? That's very happening now.
It absolutely is. And they use the instrument that Nate's pulling up. It's the instrument they use is almost identical, maybe not made out of wood, but pretty much identical to what we used.
Yeah. Yeah.
We use today.
Was it
a groove director?
A groove director.
It helps pull up and lift that tissue in between. That holds tension there, because that's what you want to release, is that tension.
So this is not a procedure that hasn't been, it's been done through the ages because they knew the problems with it. The earliest that I saw was potentially Aristotle or Hippocrates as early as 300 BC.
Oh, wow.
Or 400 BC. Hippocrates actually was talking about, then Aristotle, about the damage that it can actually do. So, that is a long time ago.
Damage that what can do?
Leaving that tissue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think it's interesting that some people think that it's kind of a fad.
Like a trend.
Yeah, or fad. Yeah. But it's been done for centuries.
It's been done for centuries.
Millennia.
And I think we're just more and more linking, not just direct tongue ties, but we're linking it all together, right? We're linking oral restrictions. We're looking at oral function. We're looking at jaw growth, underdeveloped jaws. We're looking at how our faces are just naturally taking shape, more downward vertical growth. This all impacts our airway and how we breathe and sleep and function. So that's what's complicated about what airway is, because it's so many different things. And
It's not just tongues.
No, it's not. And it's far from just having a tongue tie release. We never tell anyone, this tongue tie release is going to solve all your problems. So there's a lot goes into it.
Yeah, there is. And like you said, each individual patient, you have to assess the entire patient, and you have to look at everything to get the best outcome for the patient. Mm-hmm. It might be that this patient needs a tongue tie release. This patient needs expansion. This patient, actually their best option is a mandibular advancement device. Mm-hmm. We don't know until we actually go through it with each of these patients. Let's go through the history a little bit of, there was a, and I know you know this, and I don't remember the guy's exact name. He was an archaeologist. He wrote 7 books.
I do not. I'm not going to be able to think of it.
It's Dr. Corsini.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And he wrote 7 books from archaeology. And then what he did is he looked at skeletal remains of our ancestors. Mm-hmm. And basically from 400 years ago to the beginning of man, they looked at the skeletal and they said that our jaws were much bigger. Mm-hmm. And that gave them a much greater ability to be able to breathe, to be able to eat, to be what you didn't find is periodontal disease.
They all had their dentition.
Yeah.
All their teeth.
What's crazy is if you go into like a museum and you see these ancient skulls, all their teeth are there.
Right. They have all their teeth and they're straight.
And they're big.
And they're big.
Yeah, and their mouths are huge.
Yeah.
And so what took place between 400 years ago and today to where now there's books being written by Stanford that actually, like the book Jaws, what is happening? Why is our jaws truly shrinking? Mm-hmm. What's taking place?
Well, and the book by James Nestor, too, Breathe, is a great book. And he goes into those archaeology studies and findings. A huge part is diet. Huge. Even transportation, how we get around, where we used to walk everywhere. We needed different breathing techniques. We needed bigger nasal cavities. What we needed to survive is different. So we have... you know, we call it de-evolutionized. I think that's what he called it. But, you know, we have more downward vertical growth. We're not chewing. We have soft foods. But think about your foods that you give kids. Because my son's, he's one. And if you were to go look at the store, right, you have pouches. You have liquids. We're on liquid diets.
Go-gurts. I mean.
Go-gurts. Everything's soft. You know, and baby-led weaning, that also is becoming a big thing. I mean, the way I was raised is completely different than the way, or you maybe the way you raised your kids and what you gave them to eat is very different than what they encourage now. Where,
oh, absolutely.
You know, you're feeding your kids your meals as well, and they're eating foods by hand. It's completely different.
Is that controversial?
I don't think so.
I think it's actually... very well understood.
I think
now,
it's,
right?
I think most people are on this. Yeah, absolutely.
So the big same corporations, page. The Gerbers and all of that with the baby food and everybody is the only ones that are kind of saying, no, look at how great this is.
Well, it's convenient.
That's
look,
what it is.
I spend my life at the grocery store now and cooking food when I never cooked a day in my life before I had a baby. And I'm not kidding you on like, I would snack and I never made meals. And now all I do is buy cookbooks and watch recipes online and try to figure out what to feed my baby all the time because it is a lot of work. So I understand the convenience of what's in the grocery store.
But here's the thing. If you do those things now,
yeah,
what are you preparing your son? So that the facial growth that he's going to have, mm-hmm. which will lead to, what are the things that will lead to him being able to do better?
So my goals for him, and we started with, we did a tongue tie release. We were able to successfully breastfeed until he was 7 months old. And then my supply changed. If I could have breastfed him longer, I would have. But you know, we were trying to do all the right things. And then we started baby-led weaning and soft foods that were mashable, but you know, he's eating them by hand. So by the time now he's 12 months, he's handfuls of everything, right? And then the molars come in and then you start changing the textures of foods. So he's going to be eating, you know, not his age, it's not safe to be eating raw vegetables, but you know, he'll be chewing from an early age. And helping build good jaw structure just from chewing.
Which then increases the airway, which then gets him more sleep, which then helps him to be
broaden
able-
broaden his palate.
Which yeah. then helps with ADD, ADHD, yeah. inability to be, I mean, to be able to not, you know, pee in the middle of the night. There's so many positives.
So many things. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, growth patterns, more growth hormone. I mean, all mm-hmm. the things that a parent would want. Yeah. Right. What was the one thing that you wanted to talk about today? I can't remember.
So I think a good issue to talk about that people maybe have a lot of questions on would be dental extractions.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
that are recommended.
Yeah, because you were saying about you and how you grew up.
Yeah, and it was so really typical. Well, and it still is. So I worked in pediatric dental offices for 7-8 years. And on average, I'd have at least 4 patients a week that I would have referrals from to extract teeth, whether that's baby teeth. Serial extractions to make room for teeth, like especially the upper laterals, because those tend to be pretty crowded. And then we're taking out baby canines early, very early. Not like, okay, the root's half gone and this is going to encourage better eruption. This is like the full roots there.
So basically what's happening is that the the patient, the child, is sent to an orthodontist. The orthodontist then sends to their dentist a referral slip back, and it's an extraction form. And these are the teeth that we're recommending that you extract.
Yes.
And you and I both did this.
Yes.
We would take that form and go, okay. And I've extracted tons of
many.
So many. And now the ones that I just cringe about is the permanent teeth that I've done.
Which I had four of those. I actually, Lon, I don't think have I ever showed you this?
No.
I wrote a book on this when I was little about my experience. I have to show you.
Okay. I want to see it.
I have it on my phone. I'll have to grab it. So I wrote a book and narrated it, drew the pictures of going to the dentist because I needed my teeth extracted because they were too crowded when I was little, and how awful it was. I drew a picture of the dentist with the big shot. I said how bad it hurts, how scared I was. Drew a picture of myself in our van driving there, terrified, you know, and for what? Like, I look at this now, what I look at, and I do have, because I work with an airway orthodontist, and sometimes we'll have baby teeth extracted, like CNH, the baby canines, but typically the patient's much older, and about half those roots are resorbed away. And this is to encourage the permanent teeth to come in, not when they're, I don't know, 7, 8, and the laterals are just, they're coming behind, or there's just no room for the laterals to come in.
Well, our biggest fear is, even with baby teeth, and sometimes we get these earlier interventions from certain orthodontists, that they want us to take out baby teeth, and then you end up with a collapsed, even further collapse of the structures.
Well, what happens when you take any tooth out?
Yeah, you end up collapsing.
You lose bone, it collapses. Instead of, you know, now I would look at that differently and say, this is a red flag that we need to expand. And okay, if we have to take the teeth out, fine, but we need to immediately get something in this child's mouth, whatever it is, to start expanding their jaws.
Yeah, they have to have a plan of action,
yes,
not just to extract. So in your case, your orthodontist, how old were you?
I was probably, I was trying to figure that out because I had lots of teeth because I had the permanent teeth extracted too. I think these were baby teeth though.
So that you started with baby teeth.
I'm pretty sure I was probably 7 or 8.
Okay, so 7 or 8, they got the first report, which was, okay, we're going to take out all these baby teeth. Mm-hmm. And that's what all this is from. And so you have vivid memories.
Vivid.
Which is then very impactful.
I can't even believe I'm a dentist for how bad it was.
Well, because it's traumatic.
I remember screaming, feeling like I was choking on blood. Oh, like,
you remember that?
Oh, I remember it. It was just horrific. But then I got teeth pulled out again. And I remember that I remember being proud of myself for being very brave. And it wasn't as bad. But I was definitely older the first time around. That's why I think there were baby teeth that I had and I wrote this book about. Because it was so bad. And then I remember being really proud of myself for being so good the second time with the premolars.
With the removal of permanent teeth.
Yes.
And so the orthodontist, the reason they do that is because there's so much crowding, there's not enough room. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they had the theory of removing a permanent tooth, 4 of them, mm-hmm. and then basically creating enough room and then pulling everything back. Mm-hmm. Which then at the time, you probably were happy when you got done with your braces because you have beautiful teeth.
Yeah,
and they're straight, yep. They're pretty.
Yeah. But I did have bone loss right from the get-go on my lower anteriors.
Oh, wow.
You did. I had some black triangles, at the end of ortho.
Did you have to have surgery?
No, I mean, I've never fixed it, but it's still not great. It bothers me. But I did, you know, I have a really thin biotype. So I've always struggled with my lower, you know, the bone levels on my lower front. Well, it wasn't as bad was when I was younger, right? It's continually gotten a little worse as I get older, but.
So, but you have a super narrow palate.
Very narrow. Yeah. I'm like 28 millimeters wide.
Yeah. And again, we don't like to use numbers of this is average, but the numbers that we kind of throw around is 37 to 39. Again, everyone is an individual.
I can fit my tongue okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're not one. You're thin. Do I think you need to be 37? No.
Yeah. Am I going to go get orthognathic surgery to meet that number?
No way.
No. I would like to go into aligners and do some expansion on myself.
And I think you could probably get to 32.
Yeah.
33.
Yeah. I'm planning on doing that after I, you know, go through kids and babies. It's too hard when I eat all the time. And yeah, but I would love to do some expansion.
So in reality, again, in the medical field, it is to do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
We know that if you're going to extract teeth,
mm-hmm.
especially permanent teeth, there is going to be a harm to the airway.
Well, that's what we believe.
Well, I think in my opinion, not only do I believe it, I've seen too much of it mm-hmm. in almost every single patient that I can identify. And after talking with, I don't know, maybe thousands of patients, now I see that if I see a patient and they have had their premolars extracted, there is invariably, I can't think of one that has not had an airway issue.
Right, right.
Can I definitively say, because there's a study that's been done and that's just, no, I'm.
It's still a practice that remains today.
Correct.
So I don't know. I haven't been to.
My understanding is that even in some of the ortho, like, I don't know what the boards that you have to actually have that as part of your practice or that you are at least are studying it. To me, I think that needs to be. I will go as far as saying I personally think that's malpractice now.
Well, and I don't know where things stand on retractive headgear. I mean, there's lots of things that I don't think people are routinely doing, but they did a lot.
They did a lot. But in an extraction cases, I think you better have a dang good reason. I have gotten into shouting matches with orthodontists in the fact of, no, I'm not taking these teeth out. I'm recommending that they do not do this. You need to expand. And I think that's a much better treatment.
100%. If I had someone down for ortho extractions, I used to, you know, we used to do sedations on kids for these extractions. Like, you look at what they have to go through. Exactly. Having a tooth pulled, and you know this, you get someone as numb as you give them a gazillion carbs of anesthetic. They are still going to feel pressure. It's still not fun. It's,
well, in a child's mind, that pressure is still pain.
It is. And it's a lot to go through. So why are we doing this? I mean, can we keep them in and just start expanding the jaws?
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
Well, and I feel like in reality, if we could develop a child correctly, then not only would their permanent teeth come in, their wisdom teeth would also have enough room.
Yeah.
Now, that wasn't me. That's not the majority of us.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, that's the way that we should be developing, is enough growth in all dimensions to be able to allow what God gave us originally.
Right.
And there's a reason why your teeth are a specific size. It's not because of even genetics. It's that you just didn't grow correctly in the way that I kind of look at it. But I'm amazed that it's even a controversy today, but it is.
It is. And especially taking out those baby teeth early.
Right.
I would say that's very, very routine. And look, I'm not an orthodontist. Maybe there's things that I don't know, reasons why that maybe they believe it's indicated. I'm not saying to know all the answers on that, but I would just say in some of these cases, working with an airway orthodontist, because I don't treatment plan these orthodontic cases. I work with an absolutely amazing orthodontist, and we never recommend that. We expand and we keep those as anchoring, and we might have to address them in the future, or, you know, if the roots are kind of halfway gone. But
I could understand it if the orthodontist had a plan of action for the expansion to be able to get, but just to remove the tooth. And especially early intervention.
Right.
Where you have roots that are completely formed.
Right.
And then you remove it, you're going to have a collapse, like you just said. Mm-hmm. Here's in 2023, they actually came out with a study, and I think it was done over in England. And they said that if you extract a permanent tooth, It doesn't matter where it's at in the jaw. You get up to 4 millimeters of bone loss within the first 6 months.
I would believe that.
That's a tremendous amount of bone loss. So 4 millimeters, buccolingually, and a millimeter and a half from the height of the tooth. That's just in the first 6 months.
Yeah.
So if that is done, early intervention, within even a child, that amount of bone loss is going to potentially affect them the rest of their life.
Well, I mean, you make room for the other tooth to come in, right? So the other tooth can come in a little bit better. But I will tell you, like, for how many teeth I took out, I should have been seeing way more expanders. Mm-hmm. I should have been seeing that routinely with lots and lots of patients if we're taking that many baby teeth out early.
Yeah.
Then we should be also expanding, which then you're building bone.
Correct.
So fine, if they're that in the way and there's need to take them out. But that is my warning flag, that is alarms going off, that you should start expanding the jaws right away. There's not room. And it's not that there's just not room for your lateral teeth. There's probably not room for any of them. So it's just a hot mess that's growing up there in the bone. And that should be like, hey, we got to do something right now. We got to expand.
Yes.
We got to get expansion going in whatever way you choose to do it.
And maybe we could have, I'm not an orthodontist either, and I don't want to make definitive statements not being an orthodontist. Maybe we could have someday, maybe even from Zoom, have Dr. W come on have him. And because he has done so many thousands of these cases, mm-hmm. and he's such a humble guy, it would be great for people to be able to see that.
Yep.
And who we work with and how this is done, especially through Breathe Airway, and understand that process, that would be a really good thing.
I've learned so much. And even he's still learning with, I know Invisalign's, they have a few doctors that are airway doctors. And the way they set these cases up, it is different than traditional orthodontics. And they're even learning, hey, we increase the overjet, we get spontaneous correction of the mandible. Like, there, you know, it's all about expanding, moving the mandible forward. And so it's even new to them in how we treatment plan at this stage.
Yeah, because we're learning that if we get to it earlier, like we said, 4 years old, mm-hmm. if we get to that, then the outcome for the child is so much, it's so much easier to finish where the correct position is for the final for mm-hmm. these children. We also know that, okay, so I think we talked about this, but let's go through it again. The most growth of a child's skull, the full growth, is done between what ages?
5-6.
Yeah, the most is 0 to 2.
Oh, yeah, you're done by like,
0 to 2, the majority of it. Then the next big growth phase, and it's like, I don't know, I think it's like 50% or 70% by 2. And then you have this other growth phase by 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. Then there's not a lot of growth from that point forward. Mm-hmm. And so the most, I mean, there is some, but not very much.
Yeah. So my niece is, we did her tongue tie release. She's been doing myo and speech therapy. And so she's been in aligners for about a month. And she just does nighttime wear only. I mean, she is so crowded. Her teeth are, she's already in crossbite. They're on top of each other. And my sister said, when I floss her teeth now, she says, well, it doesn't hurt. And she's like, I feel it. Like it's loose already.
Wow.
And she's been in about 3-4 weeks of aligners.
Oh, that's it?
That's it. Nighttime wear only.
Wow. See, they're so pliable.
Yeah, they're so pliable. And she said, I can floss Dottie's teeth now. And she says it doesn't hurt and it doesn't. I mean, the odds of Dottie getting cavities, because with, you know, tight teeth like that, where they're touching each other really early. So, you know, we're putting 2 millimeters of space between every single tooth.
Which is exactly what she needs. Yeah.
But that's how quick it can happen on a kid.
Well, and so like I saw a child today, 4 years old, cute little boy, and perfect smile. Perfect. I mean, everything, if you didn't know better, mm-hmm. the teeth were just perfectly straight. Mm-hmm. And I told the mom, this is going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. And she's like, why? I said, well, because his teeth are so perfect, there's no room for
there's the permanent. There's no leeway space.
There's none. Yeah. And I go, he is going to need expansion. And yeah. I would do this earlier than later and end up referring him to you guys. And hopefully we can be able to help them and their family as well. What other controversial things that are out there in the airway space?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we talked about tongue ties last time. Since then, I've talked to some different providers. You know, it kind of depends on how you took the article. You took it as, which is interesting, right? I didn't see it as an anti-tongue tie, you shouldn't do this article.
I agree.
Some people really took and ran with that. Like, oh, they say you shouldn't even, you know, you shouldn't do tongue ties. They're anti-tongue tie. And I'm like, that's not what it said to me. It said there's overdiagnosis, which you and I completely agree.
Totally agree.
And you need to make sure you're going to providers who appreciate normalcies and who evaluate and don't just say, hey, there's a, you know, really obvious webbed tongue tie. I'm going to hurry and I'm going to clip it and do it right here in the office. And that's what we hear a lot of. And maybe they don't get the back part of the tongue. And then maybe they don't send them to lactation for support. You probably didn't have a good outcome.
Yeah, maybe they don't take a full. Breastfeed. They don't take a full health history. They don't take a full physical. They don't do all the little steps.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think that article just said it's being overdiagnosed.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah. And maybe we don't know in all of America. Like,
well, it is being overdiagnosed because we know that there is tongue tie mills and baby mills where that's all they do, and every single baby that come in
gets four sites released
every single time.
Every single time. Yeah.
So we do know that can, and it is a problem.
Yeah.
It's just like in my world of dental implants, there is clinics that all they do is all on four. Mm-hmm. So they extract all the teeth and they put implants in. And so if you have two cavities, you get all your teeth extracted and you get four implants placed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, those are mills and they get really good at it and they are good, but it's not appropriate for every patient.
Right.
Not not everybody is happy with their outcomes. And so you have to look at every situation and then treatment plan accordingly to the individual.
Yeah.
And not just do one specific thing.
Right. And I think more, you know, there were people who are upset about the article that it was, I guess, not like very positive or what they felt was positive for tongue ties. But I feel like what the whole point of it, what we're missing again, is that women are not being supported for breastfeeding. Mm. And that is controversial. But lactation specialists, I saw a clip about someone, literally my jaw just dropped. I could not believe what this woman was saying about lactation specialists, that it was so unneeded and breastfeeding's just natural and women have been doing it for years. And like, why do you need lactation specialists? Like, I just couldn't even believe it, right? So I think the real problem is,
so that's almost like saying, hey, I can see just fine. There's no reason for eye doctors.
Right. Isn't it natural to see?
It's natural to see. And so there's nothing wrong with my eyes. So there can't be anything wrong with anybody else's eyes.
It's the most narrow-minded statement I have. I was so sickened and appalled because going through breastfeeding issues myself and having, you know, if I didn't have the support, I would have been depressed because I can't feed my baby. Like, that's very stressful. So women, postpartum depression, like all these things, like, why are we not just focusing on, hey, here's a problem. Women are seeking out a solution. Like, maybe they are desperate to feed their baby. No one's just jonesing to get a tongue tie release on their baby, right? So look at, hey, what's going on out there? There's a lot of women that need breastfeeding support. There's a lot of people who need feeding support. So start there. There's a problem that women aren't being supported and a lot of insurances won't even cover it. And it is expensive if you're going outside the hospital, some of these private places that, you know, they specialize more in tongue ties. They work more one-on-one and a lot of times my insurance didn't cover it. So that's the bigger issue, that, you know, people are searching for something to help them. And they're ending up in the hands of a lot of providers and going through with it. But why? Right? They're not being helped.
Exactly.
And we're not talking about, the reasons why you might not be able to breastfeed. Is it from a tongue tie all the time? 100% no. Is it because they have torticollis, they have body issues, they have tension? Yeah, maybe. But that's where we start, right? Do the body work. No one talks about that. No one evaluates your baby at the hospital and say, hey, they're really tight this way or that way. They might have problems breastfeeding. I mean, maybe some do, but for the most part, a lot of moms I talk to, they either get help because they've talked to another mom, or they've just gone on this insane journey trying everything. Who knows what? And ended up landing in
our lap. So that which ends up, they're searching everywhere on the internet,
right,
trying to find in all these forums. And then that's when they get all these opinions.
Right.
And so my suggestion would be, and probably you would agree, find a good lactation consultant, find somebody that you can trust. It's just like any other provider. If those bells are going off, like, okay, this does not feel right, find another one.
Right.
And when you find someone that you click with, then they will help you, lead you. And that usually was going to lead to some very good outcomes for your children. Mm-hmm. Okay, another controversial thing you and I actually maybe even disagree on is whether taping. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of information. If you actually go on the internet, they all talk about taping, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll have a patient where I'm going to recommend, hey, just tape for a week or a month and see how you feel. I've had phenomenal results with certain patients, and others it hasn't worked at all.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on that?
So I don't mind mouth taping while you're awake at all. I think that's a really good way to discover, you know, where's my tongue at? Okay, how often is my mouth actually closed? Because it's not something we think about. So if you are, you know, you're reading, you're, you know, just at home, you want to try mouth taping and you feel like you do really well with it, I think it's a good training tool. At night, that's when we can't compensate as well. So I prefer to have patients do an airway evaluation or a sleep study. Because if you are mouth breathing at night, there's a reason, and mouth tape is not going to fix it. You have to mouth breathe for some reason. Your tongue falls down. It's in the back of your throat. You can't breathe through your nose. Whatever it is, you can't compensate like you can when you're awake. So I like to have an airway assessment of, is this appropriate to use at night, or, you know, do you have an airway issue that you need to address first?
And I would agree with you 100%. What I tell patients is, and my favorite tape that I recommend is called hostage tape. And what's nice, and literally called hostage tape because you look like a hostage.
It does give me a little, I would be claustrophobic using it. I'd have a hard time using it.
And I think a lot of people would. So what I tell patients is my suggestion is just exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. I want you to wear this for 10 minutes the first night. Don't sleep with it. Mm-hmm. Then when you get to a point where, and sometimes I'll even say, if I had you and told you, can you close your lips and do not open them for 10 minutes, will you have anxiety? And it's amazing how many patients are like, yeah, I couldn't do it. So in that scenario, sleep study, ENT. Yeah. I mean, you got a lot of things.
I mean, kids, I would never.
Yeah, I don't, not kids. Yeah. This isn't for children. But I've had other patients where I've said, okay, this is the protocol. Wear it for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Eventually wear it for a half hour. When you can wear it for an hour before bed, then try it throughout the night. This one lady came back and she goes, I had no idea that there would be a movie playing in my head. Now this woman is in her 60s and she's never had a dream.
Wow.
And I go, yeah, those things are called dreams.
Yeah.
And she goes, but I am having them all night. And I go, yeah, that means that you're getting reparative sleep. You're actually getting what you need to get. And this is just literally a hostage tape or whatever tape it is just a Band-Aid. And it's not fixing the problem.
It's training your tongue to be up in the day. You'll notice if your lips are sealed, most likely, unless you have an issue, your tongue should be resting on your palate. But there's lots of people that say, no, my tongue is actually down. And it rests behind my front teeth on average. So sometimes that's what myofunctional therapy is. We train the tongue to go up and sit in the palate, and sometimes we can't because the palate's too small or we have a tongue tie that we have to fix. But you could still start training. It's like a workout, right? Correct,
yeah.
It's like your jujitsu.
I'm trying. What would you say to somebody? Okay, I'm hitting all the controversial things.
Okay.
Patient comes in and they say, my wife wants me to get off this thing called CPAP.
Okay.
But it's working for me. It's working for me. I feel fine on the CPAP. It's just it's driving her crazy because of the noise. And so she wanted me to come in and be able to have something done. What would you say?
Well, I mean, I understand that situation because it's usually the wife is being drove crazy by snoring or something, right? But I mean, if it's working for them, I would say, here's your options. We do have options. And some of our options are really long rehab, myofunctional therapy, depending on how, right? You've been living with this for a long time. We have to restore proper function. Maybe we have to do expansion. And we do keep people in CPAPs mm-hmm. when they're going through that.
Yeah, I mean, if a CPAP is working for someone and yeah. they're actually getting enough oxygen and they feel like they're getting more rest, there's downsides to CPAP. Huge yeah. downsides yeah. to CPAP.
But you could try an oral appliance, take a sleep study, make sure it's working. You know, we want to confirm that, okay, this is a good appliance for you. You don't have these apneic episodes. We just always want to be careful before we ever take anyone off of the CPAP.
I totally agree. Is there any treatment that is known for apnea or let's just say airway that you would disagree with?
Well, there's just so many situations you could probably justify different.
The only one that I can think of, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is I've seen these appliances where like it, you put this thing on your tongue and you just buy it over the counter. You put it on your tongue and then it is supposed to hold your tongue out at night. It's really cheap. I can't remember what it's called.
Like it holds your tongue?
Literally, it's like a suction cup on the end of your tongue.
That sounds horrible to wear. I mean, that sounds terrible.
It looks like a binky and it, no joke.
I've never seen this.
And it sucks on the end of your tongue. And
okay, that can't be good. No. You can't have something sucking on the end of your tongue for.
Well, so what is that doing?
Wouldn't your tongue swell and kind of like get a hickey on your tongue?
Yeah. and what is it doing? It actually is pulling your tongue down. Oh, just the opposite of where it should be. So there is crazy devices that are out there. Oh, another one. And I've seen this. Actually, I have a patient showed me. It is this strap that you put around your entire head and he cranks it down to close his mouth.
Okay.
And that was from a sleep doctor. And I'm like, oh, that can't be good.
I don't know. There probably is lots of random stuff out there.
So I'm just saying, there's a lot of things out there.
There's a lot of things. I would go to, before you buy anything on Amazon or, I mean, reviews are, you cannot trust reviews all the time. You go to a professional before you try any of these appliances because you could do some damage to your joint or it's not like, oh, I'm going to try a new pillow.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean. That's a good point.
Go and, yeah. Could you like kink your neck from a bad night's sleep on a pillow? Like, but I don't know. But you could probably do some pretty good damage to what, like, cranking your jaw down or stuff like that.
And that's my point is I think go to a professional, go to someone like Breathe Airway that is working with patients on a routinely basis and working with other professionals.
I think the reason why there's so many is because we're all trying to figure it out. Because this is new and there's a lot of like, well, what can we do to help? Because it is really hard to treat some of these patients sometimes.
Absolutely.
Because it was just CPAP in the past. That was kind of just your go-to. That's what you get.
And you bring up pillows. We actually were, my wife and I got a new bed, went in and they said, okay, if you get this bed that goes up and down, you know, and it has all these positions, it it will decrease your snoring, and the best position is on your back. And I went, okay, first of all, you have no idea who you're talking to.
I can't even imagine. Did you go into it or no? And I did went, your wife just walk out the door like, I'm out?
She literally goes, I think you should stop there. She's the one who said it. Yeah, because I was like, okay, first of all, you're using this as a sales tactic. I get that. But I go, that is actually not correct. But I didn't go into it.
Oh, that's like, so funny.
Yeah,
good for you for holding back.
I did. I held back.
Good for you.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have mattered.
I mean, you'll probably go there one day again just because it'll bug you. And be like, hey, I need to talk to you.
Yeah. And so we know that in the fetal position on the side is actually the best for airway. On your back is actually the worst. It might be the best for your skin and wrinkles and everything else, but yeah, it is definitely not the best for airway. Yeah, we do
sleep studies. That's always when everyone snores, and they show it's on your back. Your tongue falls back. You're exactly working against gravity, all those things.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So
common sense stuff. You don't need a doctor.
No. The only other controversial thing that I can think of is just because of the sheer cost, and they're hitting it so hard, is in Inspire.
I have not seen it advertised as much as I used to.
It used to be a lot. You know why I think it's not? Is because insurance companies are not, you have to do all these other things to get them to pre-approve it now. Mm-hmm. So Inspire is, for those that don't know, it's a pacemaker that goes underneath your skin. There's a wire that they surgically have to implant to your genioglossus muscle. And then from the Inspire, there's a monitor on the, your bed frame or your nightstand. And that monitor monitors your pulse ox, your oxygen rate. And when it goes down to a certain amount, it actually shoots your tongue out without waking you up. And so it's almost like a mandibular advancement device electronically. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding, it's $40,000 to $70,000 for the surgery. It works about 70% of the time. Patients that I have, one that loves it, mm-hmm, and it works really well for him. Some insurances will cover it, some won't. So it's one of those things. The controversial part is that, again, it only works for 30%, 3 out of 10. It doesn't work for it, and those patients will have that wire in their neck the rest of their life. Mm. The other issue is that the battery lasts, I think it's 8 to 10 years, and to change the battery is $14,000.
Oof, it's pricey.
So it's a pricey alternative, mm-hmm, but for some patients it's actually working. But I can't think of any other treatments that are like in that controversial stage like that is.
Yeah, no, I did. I mean, there's always things that pop up, but.
And we're going to see more and more things that are going to pop up. Well, thank you again, Dr. Todd.
Yep. Thank you, Dr. McCray.
Until next time, we will, we'll see what else we can bring to the Breathe Airway conversation.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll see you later.
Bye.